ladies and gentlemen.
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Sound Radio, your go-to source for everything happening in the Vancouver music scene. I'm James Olson.
And I'm Travis Noel.
Thank you for joining us on this sunny St. Patrick's Day. In our first hour, we'll be joined by folk punk alternative rockers Rare Americans, who are about to embark on their first major tour. Then we'll be sitting down with globetrotting singer-songwriter Wesley Attu to learn more about the connection between his music and his life abroad. But before we get to that, what's in the news this week, Travis?
Man, it's a pretty newsy week. First up, how would you like to join the band?
You mean the band from the 70s that
Absolutely.
Broke up a long time ago? I think some of them are dead.
That's unfortunate. That's not what this story is about. Music Heals has announced a fundraising campaign to celebrate Music Therapy Awareness Month. I wasn't really aware that was the month.
It's the month of March.
Yeah, I know that now.
Yeah.
It's working already. It's pretty simple. You can join their band by making a donation to Music Heals. No music talent required. Or you can start your own band and invite friends, coworkers, neighbors, and strangers to join your band and donate some funds. Every dollar your band donates between now and the end of March will be matched dollar for dollar up to $25,000 by an anonymous donor. It's pretty fantastic. There's some neat rewards if your band reaches certain fundraising goals, like t-shirts or gold records engraved with your name. You can find out more info on that at musicheals.ca. In other news, a big old congratulatory word hug for Madison Olds for advancing in the Jim Beam Make History Talent Search. She's on her way to perform and compete at Canadian Music Week for a chance to play at the Indies Awards and a chance to record a single at Metalworks Studios. And St. Patrick's Day isn't the only thing going on this weekend. The Junos are also going on celebrating, recognizing, and awarding great Canadian music. Congratulations to BC artists Gordon Gardina, Ferris, and Jason Romero, the Washboard Union, Colin James, and Michael Bublé on their wins.
When was the ceremony?
I think it's today and tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
They weren't all announced. I think they're doing...
Oh, so they do it in more than one day.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So that's all we got for news. All right, so our first guest is the crooked and catchy, folky and punky quartet Rare Americans. Led by brothers James and Jared Priestner, Rare Americans are an offbeat and attention-grabbing, up-and-coming Vancouver band, drawing from seemingly disparate influences in the wide genre of rock music. I'd personally describe them as the punk rock love child of Modest Mouse and Cage the Elephant, while Travis would probably just describe them as nice. The band is prepping for their first major tour, and we are looking forward to learning more about this rising group. Take a listen to the first single off their debut record. This is Cats, Dogs, and Rats.
I thought my hands were making moves, but the land's in the grooves. Unequivocally prove the truth. How did I get so confused? My path totally askew. Trapped the karma bank till I overdrew. Could have been so much more shrewd with my moves in askew. The fast buck, the too good to be true. Thought I was just paying dues. Next thing I know, interview. Now stuck in a life sentence queue. Raised up, caged up, but it's screwed loose too. And all I view is bad news crew. Face tattooed, I got it for you. Permanent concrete view. Up for the institute.
we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Cats, Dogs, and Rats by Rare Americans, who just joined us in the studio. So let's do a quick introduction for our listeners. What's your name and what do you play?
My name is James. I sing and I play some guitar.
My name is Lubo and I try not to sing and play as much guitar as I can.
Nice.
Lubo loves singing. But I got him singing as many backing vocals as humanly possible now.
And like this, and Mike, look at that, James.
And I think we're just joined by another member of the band.
Yeah, this is Jan. He's our newest addition, so I'm here with the two Slovakians. We're Rare Americans, and we have no Americans in the band.
Yeah, and I am going to ask about that, actually.
Okay.
So, what is the story behind the name? Your band's of Canadian and Slovakian heritage, so not a single American in the bunch.
No, honestly, it was fairly random. My brother Jared and I were just bouncing around a bunch of different names, and he just kind of tossed Rare Americans, and it didn't really have significant meaning behind it, honestly, but I wish we had, like, a better story. I feel like we should almost come up with, like, an excellent story, but it was very random, like, but yeah, people have seemed to kind of, they like it, or they've dug it so far, so.
I mean, sometimes you just find something that, sorry, I'm just noticing the volume is not that great on this mic, but that's okay. That's just it. Sometimes you just find a name and it works.
Yeah, I feel like we're all kind
of what it is.
We're all a little bit of like a Rare American, being an immediate neighbor in Canada. We're so influenced often by their culture and you know what's going on in America that I don't know, we're the Rare Americans, I guess.
I guess that makes sense. I was trying to process that. I don't know. Sorry, my brain's not working properly today.
Oh, good. St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just, I don't know, having too much fun the last two nights.
Nice.
How did the band come together?
Lubo and I played in a different band called The Lunas, and we had toured around Canada a few times. We made an EP. And then I took a trip in March 2017 with my older brother Jared. We went to the Caribbean just on a vacation, and I kind of joked to him. I said, "Hey, you know, bring my guitar. Let's see if we can drink a few beers and write a couple songs or whatever." And yeah, he kind of laughed. He was like, he's like, "Write a song. Why don't we write an entire album?" I was like, "We're not going to write an album. It doesn't work that way." You know. Sure enough, 10 days later, we wrote like 12 songs or something. And we just really, kind of struck chemistry together, and it was a pretty cool for our relationship. We just never done anything like that together. He's 10 years older than me. And it was just, yeah, it was a really fun process, and, it was a bit of a different style. It was a little bit more, my brother Jared was a punk rocker growing up, so, I'd start playing something, he'd be like, "Can we go faster? Go faster! How do we go faster?" I was like, "Okay, we can go faster." So we started playing songs that were much more up-tempo, and they just felt like they had a bit of a different vibe to them. So, I definitely wanted Lubo to be along in the journey. So as soon as I got back from the vacation, I kind of sent him these acoustic songs that we kind of had, and I said, "Hey, you want to be a part of this project," kind of thing. And that's kind of how it started. And then, as we've gone along, we recorded a lot of music. We added a guy named Jeff Quinn, who's a great engineer, and who I knew from Nimbus, where I went to school, where Jaden went to school as well. And we added him on bass, and then now it's time to tour and to play live. So we've put together kind of the live band, and that's where Jan has kind of come on board here for the last recording and for the live project. And, yeah, that's kind of where we are now.
What would you say separates Rare Americans from previous projects you were involved in? What makes this new project stand out from stuff you've done before?
I think we have a lot more of a plan probably now than, when you're first in bands, you're kind of playing shows and writing songs and jamming. And I think in this band, we have tried at least to do our very best to look at the band as a business, which I think you kind of have to if you want to get ahead. And so we've been very diligent about our branding, about our marketing, about having a really solid, concrete game plan and measuring that game plan and tracking the growth, seeing where we're doing well, seeing where we need to improve, trying to run different things with our fans to see how they react and just really, really looking at it as a business opposed to just a band that meets up on Tuesdays and Thursdays and jams and plays the odd show. So I think that, you know, we've really all tried to, you know, approach this band in that way. It's a really tough industry. It's hard for pretty much everybody involved, from producers, writers, you know, bands. So I think if you want to get ahead and you want to stand out, you have to have a game plan.
For sure. I mean, you know, the band has a impressive website and a handful of very well produced music videos to accompany your debut record. I mean, how important has branding been for this band, and what do you think you guys do that separates you from some of your contemporaries?
Well, we spend like an entire year just making content. You know, all the videos we produced ourselves. We concepted all the videos. We literally did everything for them. I hired great local filmmakers, great directors, great cinematographers. But yeah, everything was done in-house. And I think we tried to be as real as possible, I guess. We tried to tell some real stories. I think the songs, a lot of the songs tell stories. They also speak from the point of view of characters that don't often have a voice, per se. And we wanted to make music videos that kind of represented characters like that. You know, we did a video on bullying, which is a subject I'm fairly passionate about, and I thought that video turned out really well. And yeah, we've tried to take, you know, that kind of approach and everything, do everything as real as possible. The song Balmoral Hotel, which I think you were maybe going to play later. That song was about someone who, you know, kind of fell into the downtown East Side lifestyle and ended up at the Balmoral Hotel, which is, you know, a place no one really wants to end up or kind of have their life go down that path. So when we were making the video, we wanted to make it realistic. So we actually shot it in an SRO. And a single resident occupancy at the West, just not far from here, actually. So we contacted them. It's an odd experience for everybody. You know, you have a film crew next door to people that are, you know, obviously not in a great place in their life. And, you know, but we were very respectful, and we wanted to show what it was kind of actually like. So we wanted to film in the real areas, or, you know, what that life is actually kind of like. So we've just tried to be, I think, as real as and genuine as possible. And, you know, that's something that we take pride in and we'll continue to do moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, watching all your videos, one thing I really appreciate is just how Vancouver they are, especially the Balmoral Hotel. I mean, obviously the name of the song itself, but also just like the fact that the end of the video is very clearly Lana Luce.
Yeah, so is the performance inside.
Yeah, and then also...
Well, Lana's awesome too. She's a very nice lady.
Yeah, she's great. And then also with the video for... I can't remember the name of the song, forgive me, but is it Pay Me Back? Yeah, no, it's Pay Me Back, and I think that's shot in the Cambie, isn't it?
No, that's shot at, Lubo, do you remember the name of that place?
No.
I thought it was the Cambie because of the flags I saw coming from the ceiling.
It's on Main, right on Main Street. It's a cool little place. I can't remember. Chinese guy who runs it, he's a really good guy, too. I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to think of it, but my car ended up getting broken into that day. I got my laptop stolen. It sucked. It was such a good day. We had a really good time, and then bam, I came out and my laptop gone. My fault, I guess. Don't leave your laptop in your car.
Yeah, don't leave valuables in your car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you got a good video out of it, so.
Yeah. I versus I was also shot here. That was all on the streets. It was funny, actually, now that sometimes I'll watch a Netflix show and I'll see the exact same locations that we shot in. Like in I versus I, we go to that skate park there, kind of just all the way up Hastings, kind of before you hit Burnaby.
Peonies?
Yeah, by the Peony. And I went there, and when I saw the location, I was like, oh, I love this. This is so cool. Like, we definitely have to film something in here. And then I watched Netflix, and I saw, like, three TV shows that all had that exact location. It's funny. I see it
from
more.
From the heart of the downtown East Side, this.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
All good. I kind of see it more and more now. The more we film and the more locations that we go to, I see it popping up in different TV shows and different movies. And this is obviously such a film-friendly city, so.
For sure. I had one question about I versus I, just considering the way it ends. What, I don't know, this is kind of a weird way to ask this, but what were you trying to say about bullying specifically with that video?
Just to stand up for yourself, to not be afraid, you know, just fight back. That doesn't have to be physical. That doesn't have to be in a bad way or whatever. But, you know, just don't be afraid to believe in yourself and stand up for yourself. You know, if someone's putting you down all the time, you know, my brother always told me this. He's like, the only way to deal with a bully is to bully a bully. You know, they're not really as tough as they kind of front that they are sometimes. And I think a lot of people, when they get bullied, they tend to cower kind of thing. And, you know, it's hard to kind of just step out of your shell and say, you know what? I've had enough of this kind of thing. And, you know, I think that's ultimately what you have to do. So the end of that video, that's kind of what we were trying to get across. We didn't, you know, we left it with a bit of a, we had a lot of comments. What happened? Does he smash him in the face? Does he this or that? It was like, leave it to your imagination kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with that sentiment. It's a shame that, I don't know, from what I heard, I don't have kids, obviously. I don't, you know, I haven't been in high school in years, but I understand, like, with some school boards and stuff like that, they don't handle bullying well, especially not the standing up for yourself part of it, from
totally.
What I've heard.
And it's so prevalent, and now it's like, you know, probably since we went to high school, it's totally different. We were just probably just on the cusp of it, but now it doesn't end when you go home. It's when, and that's what we tried to get across in that video as well, is as soon as you get home now and you open up your computer and you're going to do your homework or whatever it is, or chat with your friend, and someone's posted a video of you or someone's posted a comment making fun of you, now it gets shared and it gets cycled around, and there's just so many terrible stories, you know, really dark stories too, that, you know, people have committed suicide because of it. Honestly, it's that Amanda Todd story that I think she was from BC.
Yeah.
That's just like tragic. And yeah, more awareness needs to be kind of cast onto that subject. And I guess we just wanted to do our, what we believe in anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of, you know, talking about the videos and the songs that they're attached to. I mean, many of your songs feature characters who are often struggling and down on their luck. Who are some of the characters that appear in your lyrics, and who do you would you say you identify with the most?
In terms of like a specific song, or just in general, or
In general, specific song. I don't know. Whatever.
I'm not sure. Sometimes it's just a matter of you put yourself in a place, or you see something that inspires you. Jared wrote the lyrics, for example, to Moss Park, and that Moss Park is in Toronto, in kind of a similar neighborhood to the downtown east side here. It's a developing area in Toronto, and he was there for a week, and they stayed at an Airbnb, and it just so happened to be next to this park, Moss Park. And so he was sitting on the bench there, and he was just kind of people watching, like literally watching exactly what was going on in this park, and he kind of went there every day walking his dog. And that's what inspired him to write the lyrics to that song, which is, you know, obviously about homelessness and drug abuse. And then again, same thing, we wanted to tell the real story. So we flew to Toronto and we shot at Moss Park, which was a very strange couple days. That was a wild, we saw a lot of stuff. It's a very odd park.
Would it be akin to like shooting a music video at Pigeon Park?
Yeah, I guess, like, it's really weird. It's like, you got on one side, it's like a city hockey rink, so you got kids coming in for hockey camps and whatever. On the other side, you got, like, the Somalian drug dealers, literally. Like, you can't go to that side of the park. Then in the middle, you got all the drug addicts that are literally just in the park. And then on the opposite side, you have, like, kids camps and, you know, and old men sitting, putting up picnic tables, playing chess and checkers, and it's just so diverse. It's very strange. So, and then all of a sudden we're walking around with this big camera and everybody's just like, what the hell is going on? But we were respectful. We asked people, we told them we were making a music video kind of about Moss Park and about the culture. And, you know, we said, hey, would you like to be in this video? This is kind of what we're doing kind of thing. And, so it's not like we were just going walking up and shooting people. It was, we asked them, we had conversations with them. They're like, yeah, let's do it. So we got a taste of the, you know, real people of Moss Park. We had some guys doing the boxing, shadow boxing. We had a couple guys break dancing. We had a couple guys playing basketball. One guy was smoking a joint. It was just like a kind of just a crazy cultural, you know, thing going on. And, yeah, that was a wild couple days. We were out of welcome. I would say after 2 days, we were ready to leave for sure.
I mean, that's commitment to your craft, right? Going all the way out to Toronto just to shoot that one specific music video.
Totally, totally. But you know what? Again, it's kind of like we're staying true to our, you know, what we feel is genuine. And if the song is called Moss Park and that's what it's about, then I don't want to go shoot that at a nice park in Vancouver. It's like, let's make it legit, you know?
Hmm. Maybe you should write a song about the Bahamas or something like that.
Yeah, that is a great idea. I really like that, actually.
It's like, well, I gotta go shoot a music video there.
It just so happens it's in February. It's been raining for 3 weeks. It's an opportune time.
Yeah, it's got a new song called Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah. Woo! I like it. New radio single.
There you go. The band cites a variety of influences, including Modest Mouse, Bad Religion, Ozzy Osbourne, and Dream Theater. How would you describe the rare American sound in your own words?
Lubo, you got an answer for that?
No, not really an answer. We're just trying not to model the songs so that it sounds as we want it. Just like whatever song is or is asking for it, we're just gonna deliver that. You know, like even like in this last record, I think like it's not as edgy sound-wise, but it's very edgy on like how many genres are, you know, switching up within the song. So like, let's say we have nice rap part, but after that comes like very nice atmospheric. All of a sudden, just this wall of distorted guitar hits you in the head and disappears and goes back to atmospheric. Just like,
just kind of a blend of everything.
Blend of everything, like, yeah. So and I like heavy music and also like Pink Floyd and you know like atmospheric and psychedelic. And as James said, Jared is a punk rocker, and James likes pretty much everything. He sits with me when we're driving on our first tour with Lunas and listened to the whole Dream Theater album for 2 hours, and I was surprised that he just, you know, didn't run away. So, I mean, like, you know, this like everything in the band, and we are not trying to, you know, to skim it down to whatever is appealing to radio or whatever is trendy now, just like trying, as James said, stay true to the, ourselves and to the song. And yeah,
I think like the, you know, Jared, Lubo and I primarily write the songs and we all have very different influences, like from things we like, from even movies to music to whatever. So that's why we kind of made a joke on the bio. It's a wonder we can fucking write a song together, you know. Sorry, I don't know if I can swear.
You're allowed to.
Okay, that's cool. It's kind of goofy, just the different types of music that we like. And, you know, maybe that's what makes makes it cool about the band that we like, is that there are so many influences and, you know, that we can all kind of bring those together.
Well, yeah, it works in a cool way. It's like hip-hop-y, folky, punk rock.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm always interested in what people call it. It's always a little different, you know?
In my intro, I described it as your sound's kind of like the punk rock baby of Modest Mouse and Cage the Elephant.
Okay, yeah.
Early Cage the Elephant, I guess I should clarify that a little bit, because they aren't really doing the rap stuff anymore.
Their new record's supposed to be really good. They just released two songs. Yeah, it's supposed to be dark, but good, so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I like Cage the Elephant a lot.
I hope it's better than their previous record. I don't know, I didn't think their fourth record was as good as their third, for example.
Yeah, sure. I find with them, I always like really, really like three or four songs on a record, and then there's like always like over half I'm kind of like, skip, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure, especially on their first two records. I'm really like...
Totally. Some unbelievable songs, but then some you're like, next one.
And just like, I know it was a good song the first few times I've heard it, but perhaps it's just the Fox playing that song into the ground, but like I kind of never want to hear No Rest for the Wicked ever again.
Yeah, fair enough. I totally get what you mean.
Well, see, I was kind of looking around you and see that you've got your acoustic guitar in the studio.
We do.
Love to hear a song.
Sure. We'll play Moss Park since we just talked about it.
Well, there you go.
Where do we kind of set up
here?
How many vocals? One?
Two, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, we connect up the vocals and then maybe use the other mic for kind of guitars and room sound.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
well, the idea. This is not spending the back.
You think?
Yeah,
James.
All good.
But maybe you'll line over.
Hey, you want to see it, man?
Yeah, I think so. Pretty
good.
Good.
Sure.
Okay.
That okay?
Yep.
Whatever kind of thing?
Yeah.
can learn a lot about life from Moss Park. 20 years in, still scared of the dark. I've seen it all. I sleep under the lights. I got scars from the tar and bites from the night. Alright, it's alright. Sleeping late on the grass when it's nice. The park bench, baby, when the air is ice. Breakfast is hot, hand out church rice. Begging and scrounging, men on mice. Rise and shine, crack a beer. 365 Saturdays a year.
I'm starving.
I cannot eat no more.
I'm lying.
I cannot cheat no more.
I'm begging.
I cannot keep no more. My soul, my will, my heart. I'm living dark. Man, I'm living dark. In Moss Park, man, I live in the dark. I live in the dark. I'm fucked up, man, beyond belief. Quivering, shivering, there is no relief. I'm on the shady side of the street. I'm starched, I'm parched, barely out of the heat. Just collapsed, will awake all confused. Can't remember if I was just fucked up or abused. I go hard, I go high. I chirp at the passers on the side and wear a hat that reads, too high to die. I cannot eat no more.
I'm lying.
I cannot cheat no more.
I'm begging.
I cannot keep no more. My soul, my will, my heart. I'm living dark. Man, I'm living dark. In Moss Park, man, I live in the dark. I live in the dark. It's getting dark. It's time.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Rare Americans with Moss Park. That was really cool.
Thank you.
I think it was probably the guitar work, but you know, as I was kind of saying with like the folky influence, that almost sounds like almost a little bit like Gogol Bordello.
Okay.
I heard a little bit of that oddly
well,
enough.
All our songs, we write all the songs like acoustically to start, so, and then we kind of bring them in and work on them as a more of a band, I guess, so.
Is the writing, like, pretty split between all the members, or is it primarily you and your brother?
No, well, it's kind of evolved, I guess. I mean, Jared and I made probably, I mean, acoustically, it's totally, to me, I feel like from when a song gets conceived on an acoustic guitar to when you actually hear it on a record, there's a lot of people and a lot of ideas that go into that, from, you know, bringing a band to the table to working with a producer and an engineer to even a mixer. Adds a lot of creativity to a song. So, but the first batch, we wrote probably 12 songs on our first trip, Jared and I. And then on the next set of songs, we just finished a record, with Ben Kaplan here. And that was a little bit different. Lubo wrote a couple songs. There were some songs I wrote independently. Jared wrote a few songs totally independently. And then there were some songs where, we all wrote together, which we didn't do on the first record. So, there's kind of different ways that it comes together, and it's always a growing kind of thing, I guess.
That's awesome. I guess take some of the pressure off of you, eh?
It's different, yeah. And the Lunas, when I was kind of the primary songwriter, it's totally different, yeah. It's really cool when someone comes to the table. Like, I remember Lubo had a song on this last record. He was literally, I was like, where the hell is Lubo? You know, we're together a lot, and he was in the vocal booth for like 2 hours, and I didn't even know what he was doing. And then I came in there, I was like, what are you doing? He's sitting on the floor in this dark room. It's like 30 degrees in there. He's like, I just wrote a song. I was like, you just wrote a song? Really? What song did you write? And he played it, and I was like, oh, fuck, that's a really good song. I like it a lot. So it's just, it's kind of funny. Things just happen all the time, you know?
I didn't know you guys already had a second record in the can.
Yeah, totally recorded. Just got the masters back last week, so.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we spent a full year just literally just working on music and videos, and we've tried to take a much different approach, I guess, than when in the Lunas we recorded an EP and then we toured across Canada, and, you know, all of a sudden we're in Sudbury playing for 12 people. We had, you know, spent no time online. We had no online presence, and it's like, of course, no one's going to be there. You know, so this record we tried to do totally opposite. We tried to do the videos. We tried to, you know, have a good marketing plan and have creative, you know, ways of getting our music out there. And that was really, really helpful. And then we spent the better part of the last year writing new material, new songs, demoing new songs. And then finally in January, we went in and we recorded with Ben Kaplan, who just did the Mother Mother record. He's a great guy, also a Nimbus guy, an instructor there. And, yeah, so now we're just kind of getting ready to, we're gonna release this one a little bit differently. We recorded 17 songs. And I think the industry has really changed a lot that with playlist culture, it doesn't really matter if you have a record. People's listening habits have changed a lot. So oftentimes when I ask people who listen to music, they love a song by an artist and they found that in a playlist that they were browsing. And I was like, oh, cool. Did you go check out the record after? They're like, oh, no. I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, if I hear a song I like, I initially go, and I'm like, oh, my God, I hope this band has an awesome record I love. But it seems that people, they don't do that for the most part. Now it's more on the singles, and it's more about releasing new material and new songs. So this we're going to brand a little bit differently. We're going to do probably three EPs, short EPs, opposed to one long record. And then kind of drip feed it over time. So release a song and another one in 2 or 3 weeks and another one after that. We learned from the first record when you put out a record, at least in the eyes of the press, it's kind of old news. It's hard to work a song that's already been released online. It's not a new piece of content. So people they're not as inclined to write about it. And yeah, getting out there and buzz and press and whatever, it's a thing. So it's kind of all part of the game plan, I guess.
Yeah, I've said this on the show before, but it's this weird thing where it's almost like the music business has become full circle, where now it's like it's back to the singles almost exclusively in terms of what's the most important thing a band can be doing. It's like putting out songs that get, like, you know, that really get traction.
And consistently putting out songs. It's like you gotta keep your name relevant. Someone I've been following pretty closely, I mean, she's a pop example, but her name's Lennon Stella. I don't know if she's a Canadian girl. She went from, like, zero to now she's got 10 million Spotify monthly listeners. Like, just crazy. She was on the show Nashville, so she had a little bit of celebrity on her side.
That helps a little bit.
Yeah, totally. But she still started from nowhere. She was playing small venues to start, but over the last year, they've just done such a good job, her team, of marketing each single release. And then finally the EP, and then she followed that EP with the tour. And then I was like, okay, I wonder what she's going to do, if she's going to come back with another record in 6 or 8 months or whatever. And sure enough, last week she debuted a new song, a new single, and it's on Apple, it's on everywhere, and she's following it up with the tour. It's just, you know, she's just got a really tight plan, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what has your band done to build an audience in such a short period of time? Because, you know, you guys are... got a pretty impressive online presence with, you know, 23,000 Instagram subscribers and millions of YouTube views and Spotify streams at this point.
We've been hustling hard. I've sent like 10,000 emails probably, you know. You're just trying to get your music into absolutely every single person's hands that you possibly can. We also did a merch send out that was pretty effective for us. That actually got us picked up in the Vancouver Sun, which was cool. Stuart, who's an excellent journalist, who writes for the Vancouver Sun, he wrote a very nice article for us. That was really cool. Essentially what we did is we got these merch packages that, it was like a lunchbox. They're on our website. It's like a lunchbox, and inside had like a customized deck of cards. It had a CD, a bottle opener, a weed grinder, and some chocolates. And then instead of just doing like a typical radio promo where you just send your EP in a little package, we sent these lunch boxes, and we wrote a customized note for each one. So that really helped us in the States, especially. We got picked up by, I don't know, 75 or 80 stations in the States. And we also got on Sirius XM, which is really good. So we actually ended up going to New York and took a tour of Sirius XM. with Cullen from Faction, who's a really good guy. And yeah, that was really effective. It kind of opened the door. It was something that people weren't getting every single day, opposed to a CD, which is coming across their desk 10 times a day. So we got a lot of social media buzz from that too. We had a ton of radio stations who were shouting us out and adding us to their playlists and to their radio networks. We had a Vimeo staff pick, which was helpful. The video that we did for Cats, Dogs, and Rats, the animated video, that was by a Brooklyn artist named Harry Tiedelman. That got picked up by Vimeo, and it was a staff pick for a month, so it was on the front page of Vimeo, which was pretty cool. So it's just been a collection of things. We've also, like, every single YouTube comment we get, we respond to, and we encourage those people to add us on Instagram. We open dialogue with them too. We ask, you know, where they're from, what their name is, do they have Instagram? And then we went and we added people on our own Instagram accounts and continued that conversation. So yeah, it's just been, it's literally a full-time job. It's like you're responding to things all day long. You're trying to do different things to make your fans be interested in you. And even in stuff like this, exactly. You know, I've been following your guys' show for a little while, and I saw you had a bunch of artists on. And I know Christina Lau a little bit, and I saw that she was on last week. So I was like, oh, well, why don't I just reach out and see if that could be a thing? And sure enough, we're 1 week later, and now we're sitting here chatting. So it's kind of just the way you got to do it. You just got to hustle and hustle, and hopefully it's like, you know, you push uphill long enough and, you know, you work your ass off for a few years, and hopefully it gets to a point where now the opportunities are starting to come to you opposed to you seeking out every opportunity. But when you're launching a band is no different than launching a company. You expect it's going to take 3 years before it can, you know, sustain itself, and you just kind of know that going in. So we've kind of had the, I guess, the same mentality with this band.
I feel like I should have been taking notes in terms of some of the stuff you're saying, because I play in a band myself, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's tough. This is the hardest industry in the world.
It is.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, there you go.
Good thing it's recorded on your own podcast.
Precisely. Yeah.
You can edit it. You can do whatever you want.
No, but that's like, I mean, I got to applaud you for the creativity there, because that's the way to, I mean, you, as I said, with the website, like, that got my attention. Like, all those, like, characters that you have, that you now have, like, as a deck of cards as well, like the animals playing sports.
Yeah,
they're on, like, biographies, names, like,
yeah, we lucked out there, but we had the idea to do a customized card deck, but the artist Harry and George, they're just like, they are creative dudes, man. I can give them any project, be like, hey, we want single artwork, and this is roughly what we're going for. Can you mock me up something? And in 2 days, he'll draw something on a napkin. And every time I'm like, holy shit, man, you're just talented, really talented guys. So really happy to have found them. Hopefully Harry, we're going to get to do another video. He's a really busy guy. He's a really popular animator. He lives in Brooklyn. He's also interested in architecture and AI and all these things, as a lot of really talented dudes are, so it's hard to lock them down. But, yeah, they're great guys, very talented.
That's awesome. The band's about to embark on its first ever major tour, not in Canada, not in the U.S., but in the U.K. Yes. What led you guys to decide to take Rare Americans overseas for your first tour?
A couple of reasons. This goes back to kind of the tracking and the analytics side of thing. Our following is kind of our biggest following is in the States, and second is the UK. So our Spotify numbers and YouTube numbers and Apple Music numbers in the UK are quite strong. And as can we see on Instagram, we have a lot of people that are, you know, we'll do posts and say, hey, where are you guys from? Or comment here and tell us where you're from, or direct message us. And we built like a solid little fan base in the UK. So, for a few reasons. One, because we knew we had some people there who'd be interested in playing, or coming to watch us play. Also, everything is so close together. You're an hour away pretty much from each city. Touring Canada is so different. You know, you're driving 7 hours, you know, from whatever, Edmonton to Saskatoon, and Saskatoon to Winnipeg, and then to get to Ontario is 20 some hours. So, the other thing is if, you know, radio stations and trying to get interviews set up, and college radio or main radios, if you can get in, those are always done in the daytime typically. So in Canada, it's like you pretty much have to add an additional day to each city if you want to hit press there. It's very tough, especially you. I mean, as an independent band, you can't fly everywhere, and we still don't have the budget to do that. So that means driving, and that means it just takes too long. So in the UK, where everywhere is only, you know, an hour away, we're able to hit press in every city. We're able to do a bunch of sessions like this, some live acoustic series, some things like that. So. And we also thought, like, you know, this is our first tour as a young band, and what better way to kind of gel with each other than to, I don't know if you've ever been backpacking or whatever. I did some backpacking in my early 20s, and it's just, you always have such an interesting time and experience with whoever you go with. You get to know each other so well. You're in so many different situations all the time. And so for us, we're staying at hostels, we're driving the van, we're going to be selling the merch, we're going to be talking to the people. We're just going to have so many experiences together that I think it's a very quick way for a band to, or a team of any kind, to really kind of gel together. So made sense to me.
Is it also, like, visa-wise, is it cheaper to do it in the UK?
Very easy.
Okay.
You need a bit of a connect. My cousin plays in a band called Mobina Galore, they tour all over. They opened for Pennywise a few months ago. And they toured Europe a couple times, so I asked her what to do, kind of thing, and she gave me the contact of someone to get a visa. And there's a ton of little companies there that are able to. They have like a license essentially to sponsor or promote a tour, and if they essentially you pay them a fee. It's not much. It's like $150 or $200 or something. Versus going to the States is more like $2,000 probably to go. So it's not that expensive to get a visa, and it's very simple to do. It's not a 3 or 4 month long process. I got our visa in 10 days. Like, I sent one email, paid the fee, and I got an email back with the visa number. Like, very simple.
Again, I'm going to need to take some notes here.
There you go. And in Europe, you don't need a visa at all. Anywhere in Europe, you can just walk in with your merch. You can sell anything. You don't need a valid visa.
It's like they want you there.
It's like they want you there. Yeah. Go figure, hey? Huh. That people would want to go watch bands and spend money at the bar. And that's what I just don't get, man. Like why would, I don't know, why in the States would they not want Canadian bands to come? We're spending money in their economy, and their people are coming to those licensed venues where they're going to buy alcohol, they're going to buy food. It's good for everybody. I just have
no idea.
We're
supporting the American economy.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
No, I hear you. It's, it discourages a lot of bands from touring the U.S. up here, quite frankly.
It totally does. And Canada, it's like if you live in Vancouver, you know, we're not Toronto, where you got, 10 or 15 million people in a few hour radius. It's if you're in Vancouver, you can go to the island, of course. You can go to Kelowna and Kamloops. But beyond that, now you're looking at going to Edmonton and, it's a 13, 14-hour drive, and beyond that is even further than that. So there's just not a lot of real concentrated areas where we live unless we go south. And then there is immediately. I mean, Seattle in 3 hours, man. Like, it's craziness.
Yeah, but you got to get past that paywall.
It's even when we recorded there, we recorded in Seattle, and we were literally paying to record there. We weren't working. We weren't selling anything. And, like, I had to go through secondary inspection. Even, like, my brother came, he didn't even have an instrument. Like, everybody had to go through the secondary, third inspections. They went through my car. It was just, like, intense.
Yeah.
Tough.
Go to Europe instead.
I guess, yeah.
I guess that's the big takeaway. Yeah, tour Europe.
There you go, yeah.
And then exactly. Tour the States.
Yeah.
And then Canada.
Yeah.
Almost reverse engineer it.
Exactly, yeah.
What dates are you most excited to play on the tour?
I've been asked that a couple times, but honestly, I have no idea just because I don't know anything about the cities.
Have you ever been to the UK?
I've been to London and I've been to Brighton just like on backpacking trips, which are so different. Like, I wasn't there to play music or there at venues. But I'm pretty excited to go to Scotland because I've never been there. We're going to Edinburgh and Glasgow. Glasgow, I got corrected the other day, actually. It's not Glasgow, it's Glasgow. Never been there, but I heard it's really cool. So excited for that. I'm equally excited for everywhere. There's nowhere where I'm like, that's the one kind of thing. The people we've chatted with so far seem like really nice people. All the venues seem cool. They seem like they're, from watching videos and stuff from the venues, it seems like the people in the UK are fairly rowdy. they got a pretty like rowdy culture, especially amongst like the alternative kind of punk rock crew. They have a real surgence of bands coming out of there right now. Like, I don't know if you know Idols. They were like, if you listen to KEXP, they were on like their top 10 lists of like everything last year.
I've had their most recent record saved to my phone for a month or so, and I think you're just giving me incentive.
Check
to
it out, man.
Danny
Nedelko, that's my favorite song on that record. But yeah, they've just been killing it, absolutely killing it. And so there's been a lot of bands who have been right kind of coming up behind them too, and they play kind of like fairly aggressive music. So I think they just have like a bit of a resurgence of kind of rock going on there right now. So it seems like a lot of the venues are pretty rowdy and they're hungry for music and bands, and yeah, people have been receptive so far. So I think it's on us to rock it and put on a good show.
That's awesome. Do you know who some of the bands you're going to be playing with on the tour?
I don't. My good pal Lubo here did all the booking of the whole support for the whole tour, which is a hell of a lot of work.
MVP Lubo.
Yeah, he killed it. It is a tall task to have to put together 30 bands. You know, when you don't know any of them, you're pretty much digging through Spotify, digging through Facebook, Instagram, you know, other venues, past shows they've had, and then messaging them. And being a musician yourself, I'm sure you know that oftentimes musicians don't get back to you very quickly. They're not accountants. They're not on their phone, you know.
At worst, they can be a flaky bunch.
Exactly. You know, definitely the musicians have been accused of that. So trying to put together 30 bands and get a deal with them and a schedule, it's a tall task, but we got her done. So I'll let you know maybe when I get back. I'm sure we're going to see some excellent bands, and I think it's a matter of you got to see them and kind of hear them first.
Oh, for sure. When is your next local show?
We're playing Thursday, actually. We're playing for Music BC. They're doing a Let's Hear It Live series. So we're playing Thursday at the Fox Cabaret with Landline and Novel. I do know those two.
That's going to be really cool because that's your first local show in a while.
Ever.
Yeah, ever.
Ever.
Again, like, you know, when I found out about you guys, when Jaden's like, oh, this band DM'd us on Instagram, I was like, oh, okay. Never heard of these guys. Then I look into you. Into all the stuff you're doing, and I'm like, where do these guys come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Look at their social media footprint.
Yeah, we've been on the sidelines, man, but not on the sidelines. We've been behind the scenes, I guess. We've been working hard every day, just in a different way. And now it's kind of like that's why we called this tour the coming out party, because it's kind of our time to not kind of be hiding behind a glass anymore. It's to go play and go tour and try to go put on excellent shows. So we've been rehearsing 5 days a week to try to get ready for that, and it's funny. It's like you almost feel like you're relearning your own songs. You know, like we recorded our first record last January, and now we're just playing them live, really. So we've had to literally sit down and like learn how to play the songs again. I feel like sometimes we're almost like covering ourselves. It's really weird, but I'm sure every band feels the same about their own music. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And when's the next batch of songs coming out?
The first one's going to come out in like 2 weeks from now to support the UK tour. So that song's called Ryan and Dave, and we did another animated video for that with a company from Toronto. Do you know Pup, man? Pup?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
I love Pup.
Yeah, I like Pup too. They did one of Pup's videos. That's kind of how I found them, and they're cool. They're called Soulless Animation, so just kind of getting it finished now, I guess.
I wonder if it was the DVP
video. It was,
video.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that video is
great.
Sorry,
it's not the video game one. It's the one where they're touring, right?
Oh, I was thinking of the video game
no,
one.
No, not the video game one. It's the one where it's like pretty much shows their story of their band, driving in the band and sleeping on people's couches and
Dark Days.
Dark Days. Yeah, that was the video they did.
Nice.
And that's kind of how I found this company. So yeah, they did a couple of videos for us. So
that's fucking rad. I can't wait to watch them.
Yeah, cool.
It's gonna be sick. How can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything Rare Americans are up to?
We're not hard to find. Google Rare Americans or Spotify or Apple Music or Instagram. Add us. We'll add you back. we're happy to chit-chat. We're very easy to talk to. So, yeah, really anywhere that you're at, we're at. And if there's somewhere that we're missing, please let us know. Hopefully we'll get there. Someone told us to get Snapchat. We've been kind of shitty at that. We're not natural snappers.
Yeah, there's kind of an art to it.
Yeah, there really is, and I'm that is not my form of art.
Yeah, I mean, I speaking for myself, I get Facebook, as much as I don't really care for it. Well, yeah. Most people don't like it anymore anyhow. I get Facebook, I get Instagram, but like Twitter and Snapchat, I'm like,
Twitter's tough, man. It's a full-time job. It's not my natural home either. But you know what I find is I find that most of the kind of industry people or journalists or publications, that's where they live. They live more in the Twitter world.
Yeah,
that's where they're sharing a lot of their stuff. And that's I find often the radio people, the main journalists, people who work at you know all the blogs or whatever, they tweet a lot. So it's an important space to be in, but it's not my natural home. That's for sure.
Yeah. Neither is it for I, but...
Gotta do what we gotta do, right?
Exactly.
Can't love every part of what you do.
No. It's a social media. It's a... Well, it's just...
Vortex.
It's necessary.
It is, yeah. Necessary evil.
Necessary evil, exactly. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, on. And best of luck on tour. That's going to be awesome, and I hope you guys take tons of videos.
We will. We're not going to be shy about posting. We're going to post a lot. So follow us at Rare Americans, and yeah, you'll see our journey.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to, before we switch over and bring over Wesley at you, we're going to play one more song by Rare Americans. This is Balmoral Hotel.
Start travel, explore, put our fires and start somewhere. Rewards little ones.
I walked to the corner, went in the store for me to smell bourbon and Coors. Cashier said, nice to see you again. I smiled and grabbed my shit and left. Hours later, numb in the face, I got to a house, a dodgy place. She walked, bent over, a crippled back. Years of abuse, wrong side of the tracks. Offered me a vodka cran and asked me if I had a plan. Hesitant to say what I was thinking, goddamn. I'm treading the same race. I'm way above. Becoming a whore, careers were never my closest friend, and cash is king, my dividend. To pick my brain and watch me fall, a cloud of smoke, numb to follow. Watched her as she pierced into her veins. She said she was stuck in the worst of the beds, the ugliest place she ever had been. Balmoral Hotel, the best of the inn. Supplies are steady, you can begin your quest to freedom. Calm your skin, fear to minute, start again. I always kind of wondered what that meant. I'm treading the same rain, I'm way above. I'm so
And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Balmoral Hotel by Rare Americans. Our second guest for this week's episode is Wesley Atiu. Wesley is a globe-trotting Englishman who has made Vancouver his home after starting his musical career in Toronto. Drawing from the confessional tradition of some of music's most legendary songwriters, Wesley's music is direct, honest, and homey, like the warmth of a tent in the middle of a thunderstorm. Here is Wesley's latest single, Wayward Kind. We're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Wayward Kind by Wesley Atiu, who has just joined us in the studio. How are you doing, Wesley?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. So, Wesley, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in like a small town in England. It's called Grey Yarmouth. It's like a little seaside town. But I've moved around quite a bit since then. So, yeah, like moved around from... I started in England and then I moved to Dubai. Lived there for a while. Australia, Asia. Eventually to here, kind of bounced around.
When did your parents, I guess when and why did your parents make the move from a sleepy little English village to the UAE?
Yeah, I know, it's kind of a random, like a huge
dramatic
shock.
Yeah, yeah. Dramatic shift.
Yeah, my mom got a job there when I was like 16, 17. So we just kind of, it was right before Christmas and it was just kind of a up and leave kind of situation. The company offered her a job and she just kind of took it and was like, yeah, we have to take this opportunity. So we moved out there and yeah, it was pretty wild. It's an interesting place for sure. So
I don't even, like, what is life like there? Especially again, as you know, someone who isn't, in your case is an Englishman mm-hmm. living in the UAE.
Yeah.
I have to wonder what it's been like living there for you.
It's not like anywhere else I've lived, that's for sure. It's kind of always hot. Always pretty warm. And it was kind of weird because we went to like expat schools, so we were at school with people from the UK and from America, from Canada, from kind of all over. So it's kind of picked up where I left off with school over there. But it's definitely like just a very weird place to be. Lots of like excess and then lots of just, I don't know, poverty as well. It's kind of like one extreme to the other. It's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
You should go there. For sure.
I should. Yeah. I'm just, because I have to wonder about that. And this is me speaking from a position where I don't know nearly enough about the region to say, but it's an interesting mix, I imagine, of, I guess it depends on the school of thought of Islam that's practiced there, but a mixture mm-hmm. of obviously like, you know, Islam, but also like excessive amounts of money and wealth,
yeah, for sure.
And you know, the culture that comes along with it.
Yeah, for sure. It's become kind of like a, I guess it depends, yeah, in what circles you're kind of moving when you're over there, but for in like Western circles, it's become like almost like an Ibiza or a Las Vegas kind of feeling. But there's also, I was in and out there, so I lived there and went to school only for a year, and then I left and I went back for 2 years and I worked there, and it was kind of a totally different thing. Then I like started playing music then when I was back the second time, and I didn't know there was kind of an underground, kind of a lot of underground scenes there, I guess, that I didn't really expect to exist, which was kind of cool to discover. So,
well, yeah, and I mean, I gotta wonder what the local music scene is like in Dubai.
Yeah, my brother's actually still there, and he's in it. He's in a band there, but it's changed a lot. Like when we first moved there, I wasn't playing. I didn't play guitar or sing or anything when we first moved there. I started quite late. So when we kind of got involved in all that, the first thing that there was music for us musically was there's a like a Pizza Express, which is kind of like just a pizza chain over there, but they have it. It's called Pizza, like Jazz at Pizza Express. It was kind of like a half jazz bar, half pizza place. And we were like, okay, this place has got some kind of music going on. So they used to have like a jam night every Tuesday, and we started going to that, but we weren't really jazz musicians, so it didn't really, like, nothing kind of came of it for a while. And then we met a guy when we were there, a guy called Abbo, and he ended up starting his own night there. And that was like one of the first open mics in Dubai kind of happened when we like were there, which was kind of cool. So it was almost like the start of, I guess, the more like alternative folk music kind of scene over there, kind of stemmed from that, which was pretty crazy. So it was kind of cool to be there from the beginning, I guess, of something like that.
And I mean, I imagine that the music scene there's, would you say it's predominantly locals, or is it a mix of expats and locals playing music?
It's kind of a mix, I guess. Like, there's not really any. It's weird. It's quite hard to be a local from Dubai, I guess, or from the UAE. Like, obviously, there's people that are born there and everything, but. Like, for me to ever get a permanent visa would be close to impossible, I guess. So, it's kind of a mixture, I guess, of Western culture and locals playing music, which makes it pretty interesting sometimes. Like, some of the instruments are far beyond what I know how to play, so, like, yeah.
Or you... Yeah, because I know...
Like the oud and...
Oh, yeah, the oud's like, cool.
Yeah.
It's a really cool instrument.
Yeah, it's great, and it's, like, just... I mean, I'd never even really seen one or seen anyone play one properly until being there. So, yeah, stuff like that is kind of pretty crazy. Pretty crazy to see after small-town England, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. What were some of the first artists you connected with when you were a younger music fan?
I guess when I was like, before I played music, I'm an avid like music listener, like kind of always have been. Some of the first like real, I guess when I was like a teenager was like Green Day. I like was a huge Green Day fan. All that kind of, it was just the perfect time for us. Like I'm 26, so it was like, American Idiot was coming out, and you know, it was like a great time.
That was me. American Idiot was the first album I ever bought with my own money on CD.
Nice, yeah.
I think it was my neighbor made. I've probably told this story on the show before, but my neighbor was making mixed CDs for my sister,
right.
And one of the songs on one of those mixed CDs that I borrowed from my sister was Holiday. I remember hearing it for the first time and going, yeah. What the fuck is this? Just blew my little brain.
Yeah, it's I actually went to see them on the American Idiot tour. And it was, I was like, I mean, I guess 12 maybe. And my dad took us, and it was like me and a bunch of friends went, and it was a huge venue in the UK, a place called the Milton Keynes National Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, yes, they actually filmed it for the Bullet in a Bible.
Was that for a different show, though, or were you at that
show? I was at that show.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Damn,
yeah.
I did buy that on DVD, so yeah. I have seen that show.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, like, to, like, I have it also on, like, DVD still, and it's just, like, so crazy to look back at and be like, wow, I don't know how we even survived in that.
God, that must have been, like, 20,000 people or something like that.
It was like, 60 or 70.
Oh,
my God. It was crazy.
It's an ocean.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to think. I don't know about Green Day being that big, I guess, as well. I don't know why. Like, I know they're huge, but at that time, I just didn't... When we got to that show, I was like, wow, this is so crazy to see this many people. Like, I guess that was the biggest show there was, like, one of the first shows I ever went to, and, like, one of the biggest crowds I've kind of really ever seen. So it's pretty interesting experience.
For sure. So what compelled you to initially pick up the guitar and start playing?
I guess like I went traveling around for like a few years, or kind of, I guess I have been still doing that. But I went to, I moved back to England from Dubai and just kind of lived there and worked to save and went to Australia to travel around. And it was, I guess, in like late teens, I guess, I was more into like bands like Block Party and who else I listened to, I guess, like a band called Foals, who I'm actually going to see tomorrow night, and they're playing in town, and kind of all those indie bands, the Libertines from the UK, like kind of, there was a huge scene around that at that time. And then, so when I went traveling, I was kind of like avidly listening to these bands, and then started to look further back and kind of got to the like Springsteen, Bob Dylan, all these like great folk artists that I just kind of fell in love with. And I guess it kind of just got the ball rolling, started reading some like a lot of poetry and that kind of thing, doing the whole spiritual traveling thing, I guess. But yeah, it was great. So I just kind of fell in love with all that stuff while I was away, started trying to write something that I thought could be songs. And then, yeah, I kind of went from there. I was like, okay, I should probably learn some kind of instrument that I can use to kind of get these formed into songs or something. So I kind of picked up guitar from there. I used to play piano a little bit, but I'm not that great at it.
Was there anything like specific that led you to go, yeah, I need to start writing my own material after you returned from your travels? Was there a specific instance, or was it just kind of, I don't know, or was it really just born out of you really diving into all these legendary songwriters?
Yeah, I guess it was a lot of that, like diving in, yeah, into like, or just, I just knew that I loved music so much, and I was always fascinated by people that could make, I don't know, something just so enjoyable to listen to, like for other people. And then I was just interested in why or what they were trying to say. Like, very, I've always been like a lyrical person in music. Like, that's always kind of what I've been interested in. And honestly, when I first saw, I saw a live video of Bob Dylan play Mr. Tambourine Man from, it was like a Newport Folk Festival like video from like the 60s, and that definitely like impacted me, I think, and was the main reason I like got into it. I was just like, loved the storytelling. I always grown up around that and around like a big storytelling kind of family, and like when we went traveling, I was just hearing so many stories from people, and I just wanted to be able to kind of keep those stories going. And songwriting just kind of fell into, just felt like the right thing to be able to do that, I guess.
Kind of on that, who are some of your favorite songwriters, and what do you admire about them?
Obviously Bob Dylan, I love. I mean, he's like, it's just such poetic storytelling. And he kind of just, I mean, it's also like his, I really love his like early stuff, just the, always been kind of that angsty, not so much political, but just, I don't know, music that kind of really has an impact, is trying to like change something or say something. So I always kind of love that about him. I also really liked Pete Doherty. He's from a band called The Libertines in the UK. Yeah, he's probably one of my favorite songwriters. I think he just has, they kind of came around at a time when there was kind of less patriotism in England, and they kind of, that him and that band embodied that, and they just had a great way of romanticizing like English language and like all this, yeah, kind of English culture that was happening then, but in a weird like Shakespearean kind of way. It was, yeah, it's cool. I love that.
So not in this, and I'm asking because I'm just not as familiar with the Libertines, so right. I imagine probably in a different way from how Oasis, say, celebrated English culture.
Yeah, I guess the Libertines were like the next step from that. Mm. Like, they were big. I guess, yeah, they never really made it over here. I guess they just didn't have that. I mean, they're still really big in other countries, but they don't have the same kind of relatable worldwide appeal, I guess, that Oasis ended up having.
I think it's just, I suppose the Libertines just didn't want to rip off the Beatles.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I mean, yeah, I was never actually a huge Beatles fan until, like, a long time later. I don't know why. I always, like, really didn't like the Beatles when I was a kid, and then, I mean, I love them now. It's like, you can't deny their like influence, but I was always not always a fan of the like they had a lot of love songs, and
that's why the second half of their career is much more interesting than the first half.
Yeah, I would say so. I get bored when people just sing songs about the same thing in their kind of first half. I guess they had that. But it seems like, the second half, I kind of grew to like them then.
Well, they stopped touring, started doing drugs, and spend all their time in the recording studio, so.
Yeah, I guess something good is going to come out. Right?
Yeah, exactly. This is a big question. How has travel informed your writing?
I definitely don't have like a one single answer for that. That's like a huge question. I've told like the song you guys played at the start there, Wayward Kind, is fully about kind of my traveling experience, or just like meeting people. It's about meeting one person in particular, a friend. She lives in Vancouver now. And yeah, it's just kind of traveling is what I'm singing about. Like the stories and the people that I've met that is what I guess I'm singing about and telling the stories about now. So I don't know. It's probably impacted me in a million ways that I just don't even realize. It's really like informed my songwriting now, I guess, but yeah, that's a huge question.
Is it safe to say that they're kind of linked? They kind of are attached to the hip in a way.
I would say so. I don't think of one without the other, kind of thing. I feel like music and songwriting is traveling. Music is writing stories. For me, anyway, it's writing stories, passing those stories on to other people, and you just kind of hope they last, as long as they can. And I guess when you're traveling, it's kind of the same thing. You're moving around from place to place, learning from other people through stories, through different things that are happening. So it just kind of is intertwined in that way for me with music.
Kind of rolling back a little bit, just in terms of the timeline. So travel a bunch, go back to Dubai where your family is hanging out. You're there for a little bit. You kind of get your, test the waters in terms of the first attempts at like songwriting, performing. What made you decide to move to Canada from that point?
I went to Australia and I did the a work and holiday visa there. And I knew that Canada had one. We actually wanted to go to the States at first, but they don't have any kind of short-term, really, like a really accessible visa that you can get. And Canada had that. So we were like, okay, it was kind of a second option, except now I like ended up falling in love with it and wanting to stay. But at first it was just kind of like, okay, we can get a visa here. Canada looks beautiful. Let's just go there, kind of see what it's all about. So I actually moved to Toronto first. I lived in Toronto for a year, which was kind of vastly different from Vancouver.
Got a couple of questions about that, but before we get to that, we'd love to hear a song.
Sure. Yeah, I can play a song. I'm going to play a newer kind of tune.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So what's this song about?
This is kind of just a simple... I found I had quite a lot of heavy songs. This were like kind of heavy topical songs. This is kind of just a kind of like lighthearted, just remembering to kind of, if you're having shit times, just push through them. Kind of one of those tunes. It's called Rolling On.
Sounds good.
Go.
This is Wesley at you, live on Pacific Sound Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Late nights and the long talks, rough fights and the hard falls, breakdowns and the closed walls, rude hearts and the wild storms. And it's tough to hold it strong, to feel like you belong. No matter where we go, where we'll keep rolling on. Loose out in the rainfall, high hopes in the cold floors, new noises and loves torn, rich dreams in the poor choice. And it's tough to hold it strong, to feel like you belong. No matter where we go, we'll keep rolling on. It's tough to hold it strong, to feel like you belong. But no matter where we go, we'll keep rolling on.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Wesley Etu with Rolling On. Exclusive debut performance, I guess, on the air. I'm sure you played it live, but
yeah, only once actually. I played it at Root Dwellers.
This past Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice to kind of felt like I've been hibernating over the winter, so it was kind of nice to get out there and play again, play some new songs.
Definitely. So you started. You moved to Canada, but you were in Toronto for about 2 years. Yeah. What was it like living there?
I loved it actually. We moved into a backpackers hostel when we first got there. So I traveled with two other friends. One of whom is still in Canada. She's just moved to Vancouver recently. The other one's back in the UK now. But we stayed at this hostel called The Only Backpackers. And I don't know if you guys have been to Toronto before, but I was on the Danforth, kind of in the eastern end of Toronto. It was great. We stayed there for way too long to be at a hostel, but it was, it was really good fun.
How does the music scene there compare to the music scene here in Vancouver?
I would say, like, the main difference really is Toronto is so huge. It's just there's so many things going on, like so many different pockets of music scenes there, that it's kind of hard to find your place, I guess. Or I guess the sense of like community is, I find, a lot stronger here, or I have done since I've been here. I mean, maybe I wasn't in the right places, I guess, in Toronto, or I just I don't know. Yeah, I really loved it, and I met like some great people in the music scene there. I recorded like my first ever like record there and everything. The producer was actually from Vancouver, which is funny, but he lives there now. And yeah, I would say that's the main difference I noticed, that there's so many things going on that I found it a little more difficult, yeah, to find my place in the music scene there. Whereas I felt like as soon as I got here, I was just kind of welcomed in by this community, which was really cool. So,
yeah, I mean, I imagine part of that has to do with just the sheer numbers of people in Toronto as opposed to here.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of more like Toronto is the biggest city in Canada, right? So I guess people are going there. It's like the New York kind of thing where people are like go there, make their dreams come true, kind of like this like big city. You can get everything there. And I think that's kind of what is happening. Like, people are going there, countless record producers, studios, everything. Like, you can pretty much make it happen if you want to there. So yeah, it's kind of cool in that way, but it's just, yeah, so overwhelming especially when you're just, I think more so because I was kind of just starting out really, or I'd only been playing a couple of years at that point. And yeah, Toronto was like my first place trying to do something properly with music. So I was just overwhelmed by like such a huge city, I guess.
Yeah. And as you kind of alluded to, one of the many things you did while you were in Toronto was you recorded your first EP, The Other Side, which features lyrics rife with social commentary, and even includes a little bit of a spiritual undercurrent. What are some of the subjects that strike a nerve with you that you really wanted to address on these songs?
I guess like those songs were like fresh from being in Dubai, or just in the Middle East in general. So I guess like a lot of the songs came from that. The main, like I had a single on, or a song on there called The Kingdom, which is not really I guess it could seem like a religious reference, but I didn't really think of it that way. I just felt of it as being like this dream place, that like a perfect world kind of thing. And I guess my main thing on like doing that EP was I was really interested by how just people, I noticed this a lot in Dubai, especially people work in different jobs and different professions, just felt that they had kind of something up on the other person, or it was like a very like huge divide there. And I guess that's what that was about, just not wanting to be around that situation, kind of just because someone's doing, I don't know, this job or this job, it doesn't make them, for me, it doesn't make them any different kind of person. And I think that's kind of the themes I was exploring on that. It's a lot more like heavy, yeah, like you said, social commentary, I guess, than now, maybe. I guess I just, it was like my teenaged angst of music, except it was in my 20s, so.
So kind of on that, I mean, was some of the things you were talking about, were they more specific to Dubai or just more general in terms of your thoughts on, like, I don't know, broadly speaking, Western culture, capitalism, that sort of stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. I think they were more broad, but it was just became apparent to me when I was in the in Dubai especially. So it just kind of, I guess those things were more in the forefront. And then I was just aware that they were present everywhere else in the Western world.
Yeah.
So I kind of just, it felt like the right thing to write about at the time for me. It just, and I was also listening to a lot of political folk music back then, so it was kind of obviously that could have been influencing the style of songs that I was kind of writing and wanted to write back. So
I mean, what would you say is your, you know, what's the Wesley Etu spin on protest music?
My spin, oh, I don't know. Like, how do, what do you mean, like, how do I, like, do I have a song that I think is like a pro?
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm being a little general or a little loose with the term protest song, because you're not really protesting anything specifically, which I think is smart because it kind of dates some of the music.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good anti-Vietnam War songs, but they kind of lose their punch, and you're like, yeah, it didn't end until 73.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I think my view kind of on it, probably one of the main bands I'm listening to now that I feel has a, I guess what you call a protest, or I go in for that kind of protest song, is I listen to 1975 a fair bit, And a couple of the tracks from their new album are kind of, I don't know, if you're going to write a protest song, I feel like it needs to be kind of informed on and current on maybe what's actually going on at the time. But it also shouldn't take itself too seriously. Like, I'd hate to get, I don't know, kind of caught up in that, in taking myself too seriously or any music taking itself too seriously.
I mean, it's kind of the risk you run, right? Is you don't want to sound like the smartest guy in the room, even though when you're all you're trying to say is like, hey, this is messed up and this isn't how things should be.
Yeah, it's more just wanting, protest songs shouldn't be trying to tell anyone that they're wrong. They should just be, I don't know, they're just kind of giving my point of view on what I've seen or how I feel about something. Yeah, and never wanting to like push anything on anyone or that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. And kind of on that, because with what you said about the kingdom in mind, what are you trying to say with the song Jesus Was a Punk? I'm just kind of curious because, you know, there's like the kingdom, which you already said wasn't a direct, intended to be a direct religious reference, but then you have a song called Jesus Was a Punk, so.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, like I said, the kingdom wasn't intended. I guess it's just coincidentally worked out that way, being on the same EP. But Jesus Was a Punk is actually just a, it felt kind of like that song wasn't like really too serious when I first wrote it. I was kind of just playing around with the idea with my brother one like evening, just talking about, oh, it's kind of funny how Jesus is like this like perfect, meant to be this perfect person or like something like that, but he's actually kind of reminds me more of like a punk rocker in the way that he was like anti-establishment, I guess. So it was more just like a, yeah, not too serious, I mean serious tone, like undertones, but yeah, kind of, I think the feel of the song is kind of fairly lighthearted, and it only became Jesus Was a Punk, I think, from one, oh, it's a long time ago now, I haven't played the song in a really long time, but there was one line in it that had the year 77 in it, and then that's when I thought, because that's when punk kind of started for us in the UK, and it just kind of came about from that. It was a really weird song, the way it came about, just kind of things came together, and we were like, yeah, Jesus, maybe he was a punk, and then it just was like, this is a good name for a song, and it kind of just grew from there. And so yeah, I guess my brother kind of weirdly helped me write it in that way. We just kind of chucked ideas around with it, and yeah, it's just kind of good fun, really.
There's actually a comic that you might not be aware of,
okay,
that I recommend reading because it's pretty wild. It's called Punk Rock Jesus.
Okay, no way, I didn't know that.
Yeah, quite literally. So now this, the plot's bananas in a great way. It's about this secret government project, and apparently it's a multinational project.
Okay.
Where they somehow get Jesus's DNA, and a woman is impregnated with the clone of Jesus.
Right.
And the clone Jesus is born, and he rejects religion and champions independent thought and becomes a punk rock.
That's so funny.
Singer.
I did
with
not.
Like a mohawk and everything.
No way. Is what's the comedian's name?
It's a comic.
Like an comic book.
Yeah, a comic book.
No way. I didn't. How long has it been around? A long time?
It's from like 2005 or something like
crazy.
That.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never heard of that, but that's weirdly.
I found it at the Vancouver Public Library. I found it of all places. I'm like, this is called Punk Rock Jesus. I'm going to read this because this sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, that's kind of what that song, I guess, is without even knowing that existed. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
I feel like I should just find out who, I don't know, I should just like message that person. Whoever. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be buying that now.
give that a read. Not enough people know about it, but I'm just like, Hot damn, is it? Is it nuts in a good way?
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
Like it's so ridiculous, but they make the premise somewhat believable.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's so funny. I can't believe I've never heard of that. I'm surprised it never kind of came up. I don't know how it would have come up somehow. Because sometimes you do this thing. I don't know if other musicians do this thing, but I just think it's kind of funny. When you, like, search your... If you're... Especially now, because everything's, like, such a huge social media presence, I guess. You... Well, you kind of want your... Whatever your music, like, alias is to be easily, like, searchable online and to know if anyone else has the same... Is doing the same thing with your name. So it's kind of the same thing with song titles. Like, sometimes just be like, oh, if someone's used this so many times... Maybe I'll just give it a quick Google and see what comes up. But I wonder if I ever Googled Jesus Was a Punk, because I'm sure that would have come up. But
yeah,
I'm definitely going to be buying it.
Comic book recommendations on Pacific Sound Radio. Let's see. So you've been living in Vancouver for over a year now. What's your experience been like as a performer in the local music community here?
It's been great, to be honest. I honestly can't say any bad words about it. Since I've been here, everyone's really kind of welcomed me in. I think the first night we got here, some friends took us to Red Truck Brewing, and they knew the manager there, and we had a tour around there, and they had live music. So I ended up playing there like within a week of being here. And Lonica, who does the sound here, she actually did sound for me there, and so it was like funny to bump into her again here. But yeah, a lot of people just really like welcomed me in and helped me out when I first got here. I used to go to Corduroy in Kits. They have an open mic still every Tuesday there. That was kind of the first place I went to see. I normally always go to open mics if I'm new to a city, just to kind of seek out what's out there kind of thing. So I think that's the first place I went, and I met the guys from, I don't know if you've had them on, but there's a band called the Tired Sunday Choir. They're like a local band.
Yeah, I haven't heard them actually.
They're great. They're like a country kind of folk band, and I met them at Corduroy, and they asked me to open for their EP launch around like this time, I guess last year before, when I first moved to Vancouver. So, and yeah, it was great. They've kind of, since then, it just kind of got the ball rolling, and I met a lot of local musicians. I met Cassidy, who's playing in the Snug tonight. Yeah, a lot of people, really. Yeah, it's been a good experience.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What's been your most memorable Vancouver show to date?
The Root Dwellers one the other day was actually really kind of, oh, it was funny. We were joking about Mercury being in retrograde the other day, like on the same, like it was just kind of a weird, lots of weird things went wrong at that show, but in an incredible way. And I was just kind of, it was just great. I don't know. It kind of added to the show that so many things went wrong while I was playing, which was kind of weird, but yeah, so it was like a really memorable show, which I just kind of caught me off guard, but it was really cool. I also play, I'm trying to think now. Oh, I played this would have been like around this time last year, I played at the Backstage Lounge, with a couple of the guys who helped me record and produce Wayward Kind. Like last single that I released, and yeah, that was a great show. It was two Irish lads, and then Sam Lynch played. I think you guys have had her on here before. Yeah, she played at the show as well, and we just had like a huge turnout for it, and we had like family here, and it was kind of just such a, that was like probably after my first year being in Vancouver, it was just like such a kind of warming experience to have so many, I don't know, build that community so quickly, which I didn't really expect to find, I guess. So that was probably one of the most memorable shows, I would say.
That's great. So what do you have planned for the rest of 2019?
Recording, hopefully, like, as much as I want to get recording quite a bit. I'm actually going into the studio next Saturday. I'm going to record with Jeff Zip. He has a studio out in East Van. So yeah, that should be, I'm really excited. I've wanted to work with him for a while, so I'm going to try and get just have a day with him and then see how it kind of goes from there. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I have so many songs now that I need to just put out there. I've been slacking.
What does your new material sound like?
I guess it's more, I'm trying to keep it less, like, I've always kind of done a lot of full band on the past kind of things I've recorded, and even though I always play solo, so I kind of want to get away from that and I think record more, so keeping it more solo. I just got an electric guitar, like, or a semi-hollow body, like electric, around Christmas time. So I've just been experimenting with that in hibernation over the past few months, but it's been great. So I think moving a little away from the acoustic and, yeah, kind of bringing that sound in, I guess. So it's exciting. It's nice to change it up a bit.
It'd be cool to hear you do, like, an EP or something of just you with an electric guitar.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping to do, I think. Yeah, I've been kind of working on changing, because there's songs that I wrote on an acoustic, but I had the electric in mind. So, yeah, it's gonna be fun to. I've just been kind of changing those songs that I do have working them into the electric, and that's probably the sound I'm gonna kind of go for. I think, yeah, just like the solo with electric or acoustic rather than heavy instrumentation kind of thing.
It can definitely add a different dimension to your music when you when you strip it down, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And in the end, those are, like, all, what, most of the time, the performers that I love. So yeah, it's kind of nice to really stay true to that and, like, do that on recordings and stuff from now on, I think, or just for the next little while anyway.
Yeah, that's going to be super cool. Do you have an idea of when you're going to be putting out some new music?
Probably in the kind of second half of the year, I would say. I'm going to try and record as much as possible. I'll probably put out singles and then release a collective kind of piece as an EP, maybe later in the year, I would say. So, yeah, just playing as many shows as possible as well.
Nice. Until then. Do you have another show coming up soon?
I'm playing, I'm kind of always, I'm always at East Van Brewing quite a lot. I do a Thursday set there in the evenings quite often, like at least a couple of times a month. But I'm playing at Lupolo. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm sure about that. I am. Yeah. yeah, I'm always kind of unsure how to say that. But yeah, I'm playing there on the 4th of April and then the Heatley on the 27th of April. So a few things going on.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I just want to make sure we have time for you, Wesley, to hear another acoustic song. So, how can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything, Wesley, at you?
pretty much everything's under my own name, so you can just search Wesley Atu, into Google, and I'm the only person, I think, that comes up under that name, which is quite convenient. My last name is spelled Attew. I feel like people will never, I'm always unsure how to spell my last name, so. But yeah, I have stuff on Spotify and all those kind of social media outlets, music streaming services and everything.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Wesley. Thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson
and Travis Noel.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jane Fraze. Travis, where can people check out what we're doing?
You can check us out on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, as well as our Instagram, at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter, at Pacific S Radio, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, as well as our website, PacificSoundRadio.com.
If you know a local band or artist that you think should appear as guests on our show, let us know. Fill out the form on our website or send us an email to talkpsr@gmail.com. You'll hear from us next week, 4 to 6 p.m., only on Save On Radio. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.